This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we are going to be having a small introduction as normal, and we're going to be discussing some FFG and HBO news, as well as some Beyond the Wall news. We're going to have a quick chat about the current metagame, and we're going to have a retrospective on the annals of Castle Black, including some information on some upcoming changes. We're then going to have an interview with the Octagon Tournament champion, Florian, and finally some closing remarks.
This is episode 10, and this is the one that we said was going to be a big FAQ episode, post-FAQ episode. It's actually not going to be a post-FAQ episode.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. There was no FAQ. So I'm hoping, you know, the week that this airs, there'll be an FAQ, and we'll probably do our next episode based on that. But in the meantime, we have some pretty good content today.
Yeah, I mean, I'd mentioned last week that I kind of wanted it to be delayed, and that was for a couple of reasons. I did have my heart set on seeing the FAQ, but I did want to spend some time talking about what the state of the current meta is. And I wanted to do that so badly that when I was convincing myself that the FAQ would show up last week, I wound up writing an article for FFG on the state of the meta, so I already covered most of that ground already. But something that someone else mentioned that I thought was relevant is that FAQs coming out on, say, Thursdays or later in the week aren't exactly great for the tournament scene.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, an FAQ hitting and then the people having to adapt to that for their weekend tournament.
We've got some regional news. The first, which is a bit of a surprise to me, is that they updated the regionals list again. So last week they had only added Canada, and then this more recent week they added a Kuwait regional.
Which
is not something I've heard. I mean, I haven't heard of any Thrones in the Middle East at all, at least through our forums and any of the English language communications. So I'm somewhat surprised. I mean, it's great news the more the game is spreading, but I'm wondering if that's maybe just American Army bases or...
Yeah, possibly.
Anyway, but in addition to that, there's some fairly big news regarding the New York City Regional. So they posted that their registrations are open, and normally this is not something I'd mention, but first of all, I'm planning on attending this one, and second, they're limited to about 50 people in the room that they're hosting their regional, and I cannot see them not selling out, which was a really awkward way of phrasing that.
Yeah, they're absolutely going to run out of spots. So if you plan at all on going to New York for a regional, I think you better sign up now to get a spot. You know, there's so few regionals this year that I think a lot more people are going to travel. You know, they're very centralized. You're going to have lots of people coming down from Canada. You're going to have people coming up from the D.C. meta, which is a large meta, the Boston meta. So I think you're going to see people at that regional.
Yeah, I know of at least one set of people coming from, I think, the UK over as well. So
yeah, I think James is flying over.
It's going to be a blast, but if you are interested in showing up to that tournament, which I will be there, which shouldn't be a selling point either way. Yeah, you're going to New York. Oh, and Aunt Istril's going to be there.
That's exciting for me.
Yeah, I would definitely look into signing up and at least buying your ticket for the regional right away. And then you're not going to be able to make that one, are you, John?
I am only probably going to be able to make one regional, and I'm going to be hard-pressed to do it, but I think I'm going to be making May 18th. It's going to be a Sunday. There's going to be the Montreal regional. It's probably going to be a smaller regional. When I say small, I'm guessing it's going to hit around 25 people.
Yeah, I do know some folks from New York were considering making the trek up, and we're committing to that, and hopefully some people from Boston as well. It's not too far a drive. In that respect, I won't be able to make that one. I will be in Montreal for about 30 minutes as my flights connect, but I will not be able to attend that regional.
Yeah, so that actually means that me and Alex might be able to build a regional deck together.
There's a couple other things that are slightly less FFG related. The first is that this last week was April Fool's, and there was I believe it was Tigrou, a French player, who went through the trouble of making a very, very elaborate FAQ hoax. Did you see that one?
I did. It caught a couple people. I thought there was a few telltale signs in it. A buff to Preston, the restriction of Infamous, and the new wording on Burning Bridges kind of signaled to me that it was probably a hoax, as well as just the scope of the FAQ in general. It was, a monster.
It's still the amount of effort that went into there, and it got quite a few people talking. I think it was thoroughly entertaining. I'm going to make
sure I get a link
into that as well. We also did our own little April Fool's joke, which I think I should mention because I did get some people contacting me about it. On our Facebook, we mentioned that we had received a cease and desist for guessing what was going to be on the FAQ in our last episode far too closely. And a couple of people were very disappointed that we were going to have to, stop recording and the like. And then we announced that that wasn't the case. I hope you have not been sending letters to FFG telling them how terrible they are for sending us a cease and desist. But if you have, that's kind of funny as well.
But something that you should do if you haven't done is get on Facebook and like us. Because the more likes we have on Facebook, the more we get out there, and hopefully the more people will listen to our cast.
And there's other news that's Thrones-related, but not related to the game. We're recording this on Sunday night, and
T-minus 1 hour and 40 minutes to the premiere of the new season.
Now, we're probably not going to spend a lot of time talking about the HBO show in general. We're already hard-pressed to fit all the content we want to on a weekly basis. But we both definitely watch the show.
Yeah. We're focused on the card game as well, not the show. So it's not Thrones in general. We're here to talk about Game of Thrones, the LCG. But it is cool that the show's starting up again.
Definitely some scenes that we're looking forward to seeing in this season, all of which have already been spoiled on cards, but still. Actually, not all of which. Some of them have not been spoiled on cards. Never mind.
But we won't spoil them for the listeners either, in case for some odd reason they haven't read the book.
All right. Any other news that you can think of, John?
I think it was great that we saw some Starks wins this weekend. We saw some larger events with Stark taking it down, and I guess that kind of segues into the current state of the meta.
Yeah. I'm wondering how much I can talk about the current state of the meta, given that I wrote that article.
We'll just say that, it was great to see that Stark did some big wins. I saw some other interesting builds do well. I saw a Greyjoy Knights build do well at a tournament. Now, it was mostly on the backs of the Shadow Knights. But it seemed to do okay, so that's interesting. And
That was running Fear of Winter. That was a Greyjoy Knights of the Realm deck. It's the one we always make a joke about for people who haven't followed Greyjoy closely. They have a total of one in-house knight character who happens to be called the Knight. So it's generally not the first house you think of when you're making a Knights of the Realm deck.
But it really shows the strength of the Shadow Knights and how versatile they are that people are now basically doing knights agendas out of houses that in the past would be almost impossible to do it out of. Mm-hmm. Probably one other thing we should talk about. When Steve was on, we were talking about some of the rush builds. And I think we're actually starting to see some of these rush builds come into focus that Steve was talking about. Specifically, we're seeing the Conquest Lannister Rush and the Conquest Martell Rush really take the forefront on Octagon. And also in some of the tournaments, it's starting to place very well. These rushes are extremely fast. They generally win by the end of turn two at the latest. And I think it's something, worth mentioning.
Oh, I think it's fantastic for the game right now. One of the driving forces behind keeping control honest, making sure that control puts some sort of board presence early on and really has to work on slowing down opponents, is the fact that rush exists in the meta. And that's one of the reasons, for instance, Aaron's deck did so well, the Siege deck that we talked about on the cast, because it was able to exploit the slow pacing of the meta that is relying on slow challenge denial and things like that. And with these really fast decks, with a predictable plot opening, with Forgotten Plans or Artist Deduction, depending on what they're facing, It puts a huge amount of pressure on control decks, and we're going to start to see some of these low character decks just fade just with the pressure of Rush, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you said, it's a really good thing for the meta. And I guess it kind of proves a point that you made when we first started to talk about the Conquest agenda, where you said you saw it predominantly being used in Rush builds. Well, I was saying that control builds could use it as well, but at this point, all we really see is some really good Rush builds. I have yet to see a good Conquest control build.
Yeah, I was also really seeing some people starting to play around with Defiance too, so we'll see how much of that survives the next FAQ, but I suspect these fast decks will still be there on the other side of the FAQ.
Yeah, for sure.
So I wanted to take some time, not so much to do a retrospective of the meta, but do a retrospective of my pet project, the Annals of Castle Black. The original goal was to collect data for an entire season and then archive that. So that's still the plan here.
So basically what you're saying is when the FAQ drops, you're going to call that a season, I would guess? Archive the data and start collecting new information?
Yeah, I was a little torn, and I'm not entirely sure how I feel about labeling, because obviously I can't just collect data for each week or each month. There's not enough data there, so I can't archive it every time I get another chapter pack released or anything like that. So I'm thinking FAQs are probably the best way to give a unifying element to each season of the Annals of Castle Black.
So we can expect then the new start of the Annals very shortly, and I guess it will be filled primarily with regional information and whatever major tournaments are happening overseas.
Yeah, I'm actually quite excited about that. So this season, I guess, this FAQ 4.2 season, I might have to find another way to word that, has been phenomenal. It was the pilot project. It's the first time we did this. It started in January, or at the beginning of February, with the podcast, basically a week before the podcast. And we got more and more submissions from more and more different countries. At the end of it, currently I'm looking at it right now, I have 85 different tournaments in it. I have basically have 1,700 house agendas and restricted total. So, I mean, this is something that we've never had access to, that level of data and that level of resolution. But it's worth noting that it's hard to tell whether this data is representative. I don't know how many hundreds of tournaments I didn't get data for, because the store championship list isn't complete and lots of people are doing organized play nights for other reasons. I got no data out of China, no data out of Italy, where I know there are regular tournaments. So it's great data. It's the best we have, but it's a little hard to make sure that the conclusions that we're drawing really apply to the world meta as a whole.
I think you get most of the data from the United States and Canada. I feel rather confident, actually, in saying that.
Well, so do I, but I think we'll be able to say it with a lot more confidence in the regional season, because we actually have a list of all the regionals that are happening. And so part of what I'm doing in the next version, for the next FAQ, is the first two pages are a tabled list of all the regionals that are official. And I can checkmark when that data has been received or whether it's been missed, and I can get a better idea of, you know, if I'm getting 50% or 40% of the world data, then I'm fairly confident that what we're seeing is real and applies to a lot of these places.
Oh, sounds like it's going to get even better going forward then.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the version 5 because I've been working on it, and there are lots of little things that I'm doing, but as I'm looking at the list of changes, I realize that almost all of it is sort of back-end stuff that makes my job much easier, which is fantastic, but most of the users won't care about it much. But I'm working to make the sheet a fair bit faster. I'm working to make it update the metadata sheet automatically so I don't have to manually input some of that stuff.
Ooh, you were manually inputting that part?
The metadata, I had to specifically tell it what the names of the sheets it was going to count were. So once a week I would go in and add like 6 sheets worth of little data. So I would say, look at these sheets, and I would name the 6 ones that had been added that week. And I had to do that for about 10 columns. It wasn't a big deal because I could drag it over and things like that.
But you could just script it.
Yeah, now I've got a way to script it. The trouble with the old scripting is it wasn't updating automatically unless you input certain things. But now I think I have that working. One thing that I really want to do, and I'm still not sure how to go around doing it efficiently, is I want to eventually have a page for each house. So you could click on Lannister, and you would see what agendas Lannister is playing in the overall, what agendas it's playing in the cut, what restricted it's playing in the overall, so that I can break down this data by house. But that takes a little more fishing into the data than I can currently manage. So if there's anyone handy with Excel and spreadsheets that can think of a way that doesn't involve dozens and dozens of conditionals. Anyway, so the new version of the Annals of Castle Black will be up at the same link as before on CardGameDB. And there I'll be archiving the old version 4.2 so anyone can go back and look at it, and you'll be able to go up to the version 5.0 for the FAQ 5.0. And hopefully we'll have a very good idea of what sort of global participation we get now that we can cross-reference it with the regionals list. So we thought we'd close off the FAQ season, as it were, with a big tournament report for a tournament that spanned basically the whole season. The Octagon tournament was running from the beginning of January until today, Sunday the 6th of April. So we're joined today by the champion of that tournament, Florian.
Hey, how's it going? And thanks for having me.
So, Florian, you took a deck that I think a lot of people at the time wouldn't have chosen. You actually played Stark in this tournament.
Yeah, I did.
Why was that? What made you choose Stark at the beginning of the Octagon tournament when, you know, people were all talking about basically Baron Knights of the Hollow Hill, Tark Knights of the Hollow Hill, everything Hollow Hill?
Well, normally I'm a very calculated player, and I love me some control matches, but I actually was vacillating when we were at Starlack to either play Dark No Agenda or Barra Black Sails. I decided to go with the Black Sails and failed miserably. So I decided to give Stark a shot now and see how it does. So actually no meta decision involved there.
But what were you expecting to see? Were you expecting the meta to look a lot like the Stalic meta, or were you expecting it to be very different?
Different in a sense of more unexperienced player, more players that aren't regularly involved in tournament play, and that just want to try out stuff. I mean, try out decks on OCGN, getting into the tournament scene, stuff like that. And not as many very high-caliber players. But I didn't have very clear picture of the meta in a sense of what's going to be played, what is going to be popular.
I agree with you a lot. Like, it's really hard to call an Octagon tournament meta, because it's not just a meta from a single area where, you know, in the States you can say, you know, Americans are playing this, but it's Americans, it's Chinese players, it's Australian players, it's all these European players, and it ends up bringing all these dismetas together. And because of that, you get a huge range of decks that you probably wouldn't see just in a single meta normally.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And in addition to that, I think the reason for Octagon tournaments is just to give the people something to do while nothing else is going on. It was pre-Law Championship season. It was just to have fun. And we also chose our decks before we actually knew that there was prize support for the tournament, or how much prize support there was for the tournament. I mean, I think there would have been more competitive decks if we knew that the end goal was $150 or something like that. But I think a more casual approach to the tournament in general is just better for an Octagon tournament.
We didn't really want to do a match by match because you mentioned you were going to put your own tournament report and so on.
Yeah.
But were there any big swings, big plays, or a big match where there's a story worth telling?
I was very surprised in the finals in game one. I anticipated his Bungledore's first turn with my Forgotten Plans, and he proceeded to play Marjorie Tyrell, but the version that can kneel to let your opponent choose another plot. So I was very surprised at that, and that got me pretty good. Shout out to my final opponent anyway, because he played very well. We're 3 tough matches, and yeah, thanks for the games, and I hope I see you next OCGN tournament.
Right, yeah, no, actually, that's not the Marjorie I I don't think I've seen that Marjorie in a long, long time. So were there any big surprises in the decks that you faced or heard other people were facing? Things that you really would not have expected? Brand new deck types that were being taken out for a spin?
Brand new deck types, not as much. But I played against Mattel Wildlings in round 6. That was kind of surprising because I actually didn't think that you could go 4-1 in a meta with a lot of Knights of the Hollow Hill decks with Wildlings. I think he just evaded them, and like that got to that result. But I was kind of surprised to meet that up there.
This is one of the big things with an Octagon tournament. It's a little bit different. There's no time limit, so every game you can play decks that normally in a tournament you might have some worries about, like Wildlings, especially out of Martell, where you think, can I hit my win condition before the 60 minutes is up? And especially with all these bleed decks that keep resetting, normally you're a little bit worried with Wildlings because you need so much power, but in an Octagon tournament where you have unlimited time, it's kind of less of an issue. So you can see some of these decks, you know, get played a little bit more often than they would in a normal tournament.
Yeah, definitely.
Given that there are some differences between playing in a real tournament, not only for the meta, it's much harder to judge, and the games, like John said, you know, they can go longer, the timing's a little different. We know we've talked previously about how it's harder to bluff on Octagon. This has been one of the worst seasons for Stark. They have 9 wins recorded in the Annals of the Black Cells. They're last place for that. That's including your win. And yet Stark won this very large tournament, and Stark won the last Octagon tournament. Is there a reason Stark seems to do well in these Octagon tournaments?
I don't know Jim's deck card by card, but I think what Stark has at the moment, at least, is that they have a good toolbox. They have a way to at least make a game out of every matchup. And that's not something that you see out of a lot of decks. And that's one of the main advantages I see with Stark. You have Eris and Shadows to kind of go against Lannister Neil. You have Mira. He does a lot of amazing things against a lot of decks. And then you have location control. And it just, against every deck, you have a fighting chance. And I think when you have a really, really very widespread and diverse meta, you kind of need that to get a grip of the tournament. And that's what the deck apparently does. So I think Stark is a good choice for a tournament like this.
Yeah, the one thing I would caution players is these toolbox decks require really strong pilots. And I mean, that's something, you know, congratulations for winning a deck that requires a strong pilot. That to me means you're a very strong pilot. But, you know, newer players coming in here and going, oh, that sounds really great. I'm going to play this Stark toolbox deck. You have to really understand not just how to play your own deck, but you have to know your opponent's deck because you have to know which tools that are that you can use to stop X or Y from happening, as well as how to use cards like Mira the most efficiently each round in order to win. So that says a lot about your play style and your strength in the game that you took Stark to win. So congratulations on that again.
Yeah, thanks again. And I would say I was actually kind of surprised as well because I'm usually a control player, and I think something like Baron Knights of Doyle Hill, to play that correctly is extremely difficult because you have so many decisions you can make and so many different paths you can go. But I found this Stark No Agenda deck to be actually not much easier to play. And that's one of the points that I think really make this deck interesting for me over the course of the entire tournament, because it kind of plays like a control deck, but with the difference that you destroy instead of trying to build up.
So you talked a little bit about your deck. You said it was Stark No Agenda. Can you tell us some more about it?
I'm going to release the deck, post the deck on Agatcast anyway, with a small tournament report. So if you want to check that out, you can go over there.
Excellent.
Yeah, stuff on the deck. I think the main engine of the deck is the massive location removal. I have 3 times Support of the Kingdom, 2 times Condemned by the Council, 2 times Direct Assault, and 2 Frozen Solids. So that adds up to 9 location removal spells, if you want it like that. And then we have a City Besiege to go even deeper on that road. So you just destroy their income base, and then you, like, against an aggro deck, you Valor, and then they cannot come back. whereas you have a lot of income to do stuff and just dominate the game while being ahead. And against Knights of the Holy Hill deck, the deck becomes very grindy. Whenever they play an income location, you can steal it or get rid of it, and you just start to win each round, gaining a little bit more power, getting a little bit more momentum, until you can just finish them off. That's basically how the matchups work and how the deck works.
So you said you were running a City Besieged. So I guess the question I have with a Stark No Agenda is what your plot deck kind of looks like?
I have triple search plots in A Time for Ravens, At the Gates, and some by the Conclave, which is very important because it gives the deck so much more consistency. You can search for Ravens to draw with Samwell. You can At the Gates for Luwin, which gives you more cards in hand, more events to play. And you can also just A Time for Ravens or At the Gates for the Riders of the Red Fork. So there's a never-ending stream of characters and cards you get into your hand. And the difference between this and, for example, River Plots is that you almost always get exactly the character you need at that moment. So that makes the toolboxing much stronger because you can get it at any time. You can fetch it up and thereby react to the current game state, which is especially important against decks that completely get hosed by one of your cards. Like, some decks just lose against Mira, and like Voltron decks with Beric.
And were you running Mage Mormont?
Yeah, one copy.
One copy, okay.
And what about Rickon? You said you had all these search effects. Were you running anything like Rickon to copy them, or no?
The problem with Rickon is the character just doesn't do anything. Usually, I have enough cards in my hand that I can't play everything anyway. So searching more cards doesn't necessarily do me any good. So I'd rather have a good character in play with which I can trigger my events. Because Rickon doesn't trigger No Quarter, doesn't trigger Direct Assault. It can trigger Support of the Kingdom, but when you start doing challenges with Rickon, you are not using him for his abilities. So, yeah. Not a fan of Rickon, to be totally honest. And then back to the plot deck, I have Forgotten Plans, obviously. It's a must plot against Knights of the Holy Hill decks in the matter. And then March to the Wall, which is insane when you're ahead and they're short on gold. You just destroy everything with it. And also especially good against Beric Voltron. March to the Wall single-handedly won me the game, my top 8 match, I think that was. Mm-hmm. And then Vala Morghulis against aggro decks. So that's the plot deck.
Obviously, running Winter, you mentioned to be a Raven, you got Mira as your restricted. Do you have any other Winter tech in there, or is it just Mira and the Raven basic?
The King's Road, 3 times, because the 1 point of initiative doesn't seem to be that relevant, but usually it makes a huge difference, because when you get to win initiative on a turn you normally wouldn't, it's just insane, especially against Knights of the Holy Hill, when you can decide who goes first. You can play around a lot of effects, especially against Baronet of the Holy Hill. You can, for example, make them go first when nothing's on the board and their Melisandre's Favor is stuck in their hand and they can't do anything. So you get the gold from the King's Road to play your Shadows cards, which is very important when it's winter because you're also kind of tight on gold, so you need every bit of gold you can get, and King's Road help with that. And last but not least, and destruction, which is god tier against any sort of control deck.
Excellent. So are there any changes that you'd make now that you've been through the cut to the deck? Because I know the deck was locked entirely once it entered the cut, and we've had a new chapter pack since then and so on.
Well, as with any toolboxing deck, that depends on the meta, so you can't really give a definitive answer there. But I think if I had to make one change for a tournament with the current card pool, I would probably switch out the City Besieged and add Burning Bridges instead. Because the plot is great against Greyjoy the old way. It doesn't really affect you because you have a lot of gold producers And Alaris and Mage Mormont have gained abilities, so those abilities are not deactivated by Burning Bridges. So the plot is just generally pretty good in this meta. Also good against Lannister. Of all the characters, I would probably consider Tycho, because he adds gold, which is always nice and welcome. And he lets you choose between drawing a card and getting more income, which is important for the deck.
And Theon? He seems like he might fill the same niche that March to the Wall does when you are ahead.
The problem is, Theon isn't really great against Knights of the Hollow Hill decks, Bloodthirst decks, generally decks that either don't play characters at all or don't care when their characters die. So I think Theon doesn't find a spot in the deck because of that reason. In Greyjoy, he's a little bit better because you still have repeatable saves in case you are playing against a deck that doesn't play as many characters. But in this deck, I don't think that I would run him.
You weren't running Shadow's Area or Kyle Khan or things like that that work well with it?
Well, I have some cards. I mean, when you assemble the whole package, when you have Theon, Arya, and Myra, it's obviously great. But you have to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd much rather just have Ghost and Myra, because it's a two-card combo, and it doesn't cost me as much gold. And I want to bounce Ghost anyway against Knights of the Hollow Dead to play around resets.
So you mentioned that you think you have a wide array of tools against a wide array of decks. Were there any decks going into the tournament that you were thinking, this is the one I don't want to face? And then conversely, are there any decks that you wound up facing that you said, actually, that was probably the one I didn't want to face?
Mattel Wildlings, definitely. Just big creatures and a lot of reducers is not what this deck wants to see, because I rely on depriving my opponent from resources early in the game, and when they drop Vol and then go like 10 income reducers, turn 1, go. I'm like, yeah, can't do anything against that. I ended up facing it, and luckily I got a draw out of it because he only had 2 hours time and I could stall the game. And he had to Valor himself, but it was a tough one, and I don't want to play that matchup again.
2 hours. Oh, see,
that's
this is why
outcome.
I think...
It at least had characters. It's better than counting dominance for 2 hours.
I suppose so, yeah.
It's just, I see so many of these decks that, you know, I played a game, and it was like an hour and a half, and I just, afterwards, I was like, that's it, I'm done. I'm just, you win. I don't care at this point. You win. I don't want to be here any longer. So this is one of the things I think that Dennis probably needs to look at, is set some type of time limit. Like, I heard some people playing for 3 hours. To me, 3 hours, that's too much. I mean, they got to find a happy medium, even if it's longer than normal matches. Maybe it's an hour and a half or 2 hours is the max time. But I think in the future, that's something I think Dennis should do personally. Is there anything else you would suggest in the future for these Octagon tournaments, changes you'd like to see?
I would like to see to shovel it a bit more up after the cut, because I think, what was it, 10 players or so played the exact same opponent in the first round of the cut as in the last round of the Swiss. And that was just, I think, plain stupid, because the point of the OCTGN tournament is kind of like a lot of testing in and to see what your deck can do. And as I've already mentioned, the fun aspect of the game. And to play against the exact same deck again just doesn't do that for me. And, I mean, I can't complain. I got matched up against Federico twice, and my matchup is very good against him, so I wouldn't complain about it, but I think it just isn't fair.
I find that one of the problems with the Octagon tournament for a lot of people is they start off strong, they play their first three matches, their first four matches, and then once you get, you know, this started in January and ended in April, once you get later into it, you're playing the same deck as you were playing at the beginning of January in a meta that was a snapshot of the beginning of January. So how do you overcome that sort of boredom eventually and that stagnation of having, you know, one tournament you're competing in that is basically from 2 months ago or 3 months ago?
Well, I mean, it helped that we were allowed to use the cards from Hidden Agenda. So, and then there was like this really long break anyway. I mean, when did they release the last chapter pack? Like 3 weeks ago or something like that?
Yeah.
So we didn't really have as much time where we were like playing in an outdated meta, and since there wasn't a new FAQ, I think that wasn't really a problem this time around. And I think that was also intentional because the tournament was like to reduce the time between, to give the people something to do between this FAQ and the next FAQ, to just like fill the time with something they could do meanwhile. And I think that was successful.
Okay, well, thanks very much for recording with us, Florian, especially at such short notice. And I'll make sure that if you... Are you planning on posting your tournament report today?
Probably not. Something like tomorrow or the day after tomorrow.
So once that goes up, I'll make sure to append it to the article announcing our podcast so people can follow that and check out your tournament report.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for having me.
So thanks for listening to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Before we go, we have a few things to say. I want to personally say that I have not forgotten the beer, Mr. Brian Aurelio.
I wanted to make sure that listeners know that we're still working on getting Nate back on for that follow-up episode since the contest is at a close. Brooks has contacted us with some questions that can be sorted by marketing, so it's in the hands it's out of our hands anyway, but we're still working to bring you a Nate French episode in the near future. And speaking of plans for the near future, we really do expect the FAQ to drop this week. They did say early April, and I would be surprised if it were not this week. So next week's episode, we already have a guest lined up to discuss the FAQ. He's committed to showing up. So we're quite looking forward to that. We're quite looking forward to find out how wrong we are.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.